Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Sharice Stevens, bringing you today's Yuma Sun Daily, with a look at life in and around Yuma. Let's get started with local news. Our first story in local news is titled, Why Did You Choose to Become a Nurse? By James Gilbert, Yuma Sun. In honor of National Nurses Week, the Yuma Sun is proud to celebrate the dedicated nurses who serve our community with compassion, strength, and resilience. These healthcare heroes are often the first to offer comfort and the last to leave a patient's side, playing a vital role in every corner of our healthcare system, from hospitals and clinics to schools and homes. To mark this special week, we ask nurses from across Yuma a simple but powerful question. Why did you choose to become a nurse? Their answers reflect the heart of the profession, stories of inspiration, personal sacrifice, and a deep commitment to caring for others. Director Meredith Cardenas. My grandmother was a nurse, and I've always loved the field. I was a candy striper way back when, and I cared for my grandmother at home for 3.5 years while she lived with Alzheimer's from the age of 12 to 15. That experience made me fall in love with the nursing profession. Today marks 28 years since I graduated as a nurse. I originally from Canada and moved here 25 years ago this August. What I love most about nursing is the incredible diversity. It allows you to do so many different things and truly make a difference in people's lives, from birth to hospice care. I've worked in nearly every area of nursing, and some of the biggest challenges have been the most rewarding. When you are able to solve a problem using your nursing process and you're surrounded by amazing colleagues who offer advice and support, it's a powerful reminder of why this profession matters so much. Assistant Director Sherry Fox. My story starts when I was 5 years old in kindergarten, being asked, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" My answer was always a nurse. I took care of my sick grandmother until the day she died. My aunt was also a major influence. She started as a candy striper and worked her way up to becoming a nurse. So I had two very strong women who helped guide and inspire my nursing journey. I've now been an RN for 5 years, and I'm currently pursuing my bachelor's degree with plans to continue on to earn my master's and become a nurse practitioner. Next up in local news, honoring healthcare heroes, Yuma County proclaims National Nurses Week by Alex Ibrahimi, Sun staff writer. Nurses too often go unrecognized. This week, Yuma County nurses are being honored as part of the National Nurses Week. Deb Burchard, a nurse since 1977 who is now retired, tirelessly advocates for her field. She explained why her colleagues deserve recognition even when they don't ask for it. "We are behind the scenes of healthcare, but we are the ones that are there 24/7, Burchard said. "Those nurses who are in it for the long haul, we don't do it for the money. We don't do it for the recognition or the fame. We do it because our hope is no matter what role or position we're working in, hopefully we're making lives better." On Monday, the Yuma County Board of Supervisors officially proclaimed May 6th through 12th as National Nurses Week. Beginning on Tuesday, National Nurses Day, and ending May 12th, Florence Nightingale's birthday, National Nurses Week recognizes the vital contributions of registered nurses to healthcare. Registered nurses in the United States constitute our nation's largest healthcare profession and meet the emerging healthcare needs of the American population in a range of settings, including hospitalized, hospitalization, and non-hospitalized patients. Supervisor Lynn Pencrozzi read in the proclamation, highlighting the growing demand for nurses services and the importance of nurses in various healthcare settings. The theme of National Nurses Week this year is the power of nurses, as declared by the American Nurses Association. Marilyn Whittington, a registered nurse and secretary of Rio Colorado Yuma chapter of Arizona Nurses Association, spoke following the proclamation. "I'm here today and other fellow nurses from our chapter and other community nurses," Whittington said. The ANA represents the voice of its membership of 2,700,000 registered nurses. This week represents all nurses in the United States, and that's 4,400,000 nurses. And we actually need more. Nurses are the bedrock of healthcare. Who better to be the forefront of this change than nurses? It is fitting for this year's 2025 ANA theme for Nurses Week as the Power of Nurses. Whittington proudly recognized Yuma Councilwoman Karen Watts and Deputy Mayor Carol Smith, both nurses. The National Nurses Week proclamation is to recognize and celebrate all nurses, registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, all nurses across the country in the various roles that we hold, Whittington said. From Florence Nightingale to the present, the ANA has been our organization since 1896. Nurses Week Campaign. Here is the local schedule for the ANA National Nurses Week Campaign, May 6 through 10 and 13. Caffeinate a nurse at Sunkissed Coffee House, 3860 West 24th Street, Suite 109. The chapter buys the first 50 drinks for nurses with identification. Open 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. Community members are encouraged to pay it forward. May 7. Therapeutic Sound Bath at 6 p.m. Northern Arizona University Campus, AC Building, Room 279, free to all nurses as space allows, maximum 25. Bring a yoga mat or comfort items. Donations for the therapist appreciated. Sign up via chapter's Facebook Jot Form link. May 6 through 12, nurses light up the sky at Yuma City Hall, illuminated nightly in honor of Nurses Week, part of the nationwide ANA initiative, including 100-plus buildings. For more information, events, updates, and upcoming meetings can be found on the Facebook page of the Rio Colorado Yuma Chapter 7, Arizona Nurses Association. Next in local news, in the field, author celebrates ag in new children's book by Yuma County Cooperative Extension. Elizabeth Cooley, a former teacher from Knox Elementary School, is now a local author. The Marine Corps brought her family to Yuma in 2002. Cooley had previously lived in various places, including Japan, North Carolina, Texas, and California, before settling in Yuma. Her husband works in local agriculture, which has allowed her to learn extensively about the industry over the past 15 years. Cooley is a graduate of the University of Arizona, and her love for children's literature and passion for teaching helped her build the concept for her debut children's book, Deserts Grow Vegetables. The story tells about her character Lucy's discovery of the wonderful crops that come from Yuma, which are sent all over the United States during the winter season. Cooley was inspired to write her book while driving with her young children and noticing the abundance of lettuce fields. She realized that there was a lack of children's books focusing on agriculture in the Yuma area. This realization prompted her to begin her own story. The story was written in about a week, but the entire book, including editing and illustrations, took approximately a year to complete. Parveen Ozkan from Turkey created the illustrations. Cooley collaborated with Ozkan and a booksmith in Australia, communicating with them online. Cooley expresses her admiration for the agricultural education efforts of local schools, University of Arizona, and Arizona Farm Bureau. She believes that many local companies are significantly invested in educating children about agriculture, given Yuma's prominent role in the industry. She is pleased that her book can contribute to this educational initiative. Cooley is currently on a book tour, visiting several schools each week to read her book, answer questions, and discuss the writing process with students. She enjoys the experience of returning to a classroom setting. Cooley welcomes invitations from schools to visit and can be contacted through her email address or website. Cooley believes that achieving one's goals is possible with determination. Cooley self-published her book and managed many aspects of the publishing process independently. While a booksmith assisted her, Cooley handled marketing, printing, and production details, such as selecting paper type and quality. Despite the challenges, Cooley considers the experience valuable. Elizabeth will be reading and signing her debut book at Barnes & Noble on Friday, May 10 at 1 p.m. Copies of the book, Deserts Grow Vegetables, will be available for purchase. Barnes & Noble is located at 819 West 32nd Street in Yuma. Next, we have What Four Things Do Nurses Wish Patients Knew by Onvita Health, special to Yuma Sun. Nurses are the steady hands, listening ears, and the voices who advocate for patients when it matters most. At Onvita Health, we ask some of our nurses to share four things they wish more patients knew. Here are the four simple yet powerful truths they said. We are your advocate and voice. Nurses are trained to notice the small things, catch early signs of trouble, and speak up on your behalf. We are always working behind the scenes to protect your well-being. Honesty helps us help you. Some things are hard to admit, and we understand, but being honest with us helps us tailor your care to avoid complications. We are here to help you heal in every way. Don't be embarrassed. We know that you are in a vulnerable position with us, and it's not always easy. But we have seen it all, and our job is to support you with compassion and dignity. Your kind words help us heal too. We have hard days, but your kind words give us strength. Thank you for your kind smiles and for appreciating the work that we do. Here at Onvita Health, we celebrate our nurses not just during Nurses Week, but every day. Their passion and expertise makes a difference in the lives of countless patients. Last in local news, we have three convicted felons caught re-entering the U.S. by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer. U.S. Border Patrol agents from the Yuma sector's Wellington Station apprehended four undocumented entrants east of Yuma on Thursday, discovering that three of the men had prior felony convictions and had previously been removed from the United States. The three convicted felons, all Mexican nationals, will face charges of reentry of a removed alien with sentence enhancements based on their prior criminal convictions. The men arrested include Ruben Jacob Ayala Perez, 30, who was previously convicted of possession of heroin for sale in Reno, Nevada, and sentenced to 1 year in prison. Arturo Jimenez Alvarado, 50, convicted in 2015 for possession of 634 pounds of marijuana in a smuggling incident near Welton and sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. Juan Lopez Ruiz, 49, also convicted in the same 2015 marijuana smuggling case and sentenced to 2.5 years. The fourth man, a 63-year-old Mexican national, will be charged with entry without inspection and alien inadmissibility. The arrests were made in the Sonoran Desert, a known route for illegal border crossings. All four individuals were taken into custody for prosecution and processing. This case remains under federal investigation. You are listening to the Yuma Sun Daily with Sharice Stevens on Sun Sounds of Arizona. First up in state news, we have Senate approves bill requiring hospitals to ask if patients are here legally by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services. State lawmakers voted Monday to require hospitals to inquire whether patients are here illegally, despite concerns that it would deter some people from seeking care. But the sponsor of SB 1268 says she doesn't care. They should stay in their own country if they want to have care, Senator Wendy Rogers said during a committee hearing on her legislation. Strictly speaking, the proposal by Flagstaff Republican, which now goes to Governor Katie Hobbs after Monday's 32-25 vote by the House, does not link health care with legal status. Instead, it would require any hospital that accepts Medicaid payments to ask patients whether they are citizens, are here lawfully or not lawfully present. And the form tells would-be patients that their answers won't affect their ability to get care and that their responses will not be reported to immigration authorities. Rogers said it's simply designed to create a report for the governor and legislatures of the cost of the care provided. This, generally speaking, isn't for care paid for by Access, the state's Medicaid program. Those not here illegally are not entitled to coverage, except in narrow circumstances like emergency situations. Instead, it would track uncompensated care provided by hospitals. But Senator Catherine Miranda said she was not reassured that this was simply a data-gathering operation. How can we be assured that this information won't be used for nefarious reasons? Asked the Levine Democrat. Roger took offense to the question. The word nefarious is being applied to the consequences instead of the initial act of illegality, she said. I would say that's kind of a specious premise. The legislation is not occurring in a vacuum. Roger said her measure is modeled after a similar law that Florida enacted in 2023. Representative Sarah Liguori said that law, whatever its intent, seems to be having an impact, with some residents lacking legal status moving out. But the flip side, the Phoenix Democrat said, is the state altered its child labor laws, something she said was done to make up for the number of people who disappeared from the state workforce. Closer to home, the vote comes on the heels of a Mexican migrant living in Tucson being detained by immigration officers last week after visiting St. Joseph Hospital, where he had gone with a cousin who was requesting emergency care there. In that case, an attorney for the man said his companion was questioned before being discharged about whether he had a Social Security number or legal status. That, the lawyer said, led to the family to suspect that someone at the hospital had contacted Immigration and Customs Enforcement. During debate in the House, Representative Selena Bliss, a supporter of the measure, insisted there would be no change in medical treatment. The Prescott Republican, who is a nurse, said those who provide direct health care don't know about and don't even ask questions unrelated to the medical issue. She said all patients get care regardless of information they provide to intake clerks, like insurance or lack thereof. We don't have to worry about violating our oath because we are separated and protected from registration information, Bliss said. She said, though, her experience convinces her there is a need for the information that SB 1268 would provide. Bliss told colleagues there were incidents more than a decade ago where in her community, far from the border, women in labor crossed into the United States to have their babies. We weren't capturing that data, she said, saying there should be some accounting. Opponents, however, said it's clear that there will be fallout simply in requiring the question to be asked. Unfortunately, using bills like this that you're trying to sell as something that is not going to have any impact is absolutely outrageous, said Senator Alma Hernandez, Democrat, Tucson. We have people who are scared to go seek medical care. Nor is she convinced the legislation leaves medical providers out of the loop. If someone is seeking medical care, it is not your job as a medical professional to say, "Show me your papers and then I will treat you," Hernandez said. And I'm disappointed that once again, we're putting the communities that are already struggling and already facing so many uncertainties in a situation where they have to decide, do I want to go seek the medical care that I should be receiving, or should I stay home and die? Because if I do that, I'll be deported. Representative Nick Cooper said that the plain language of the bill should reassure people that a visit to a hospital won't result in deportation. Aside from responding to the question apparently being optional, the surprised Republican said the law spells out that the data can't be reported to immigration officials. But Representative Mariana Sandoval said she's not buying that. History shows that such assurances can be easily undermined, said the Goodyear Democrat. And she said people don't need to look hard or far for any example. She pointed to the decision last month by the IRS, whose records are normally confidential, to share tax information about some immigrants without legal status. Representative Nancy Gutierrez said this hurts families, including those with members who are here legally. I teach in a school that has many schools with mixed family status, the Tucson Democrat said. And they told me in the days of the prior bill, a lot like this one, their families would not go to the doctor, she said. And they had family members get sicker and not get treated because they were afraid they would get deported. Representative Lorena Austin said lawmakers need to understand the impact of their decision. Call me crazy, said the Mesa Democrat, but I believe healthcare is a human right. And Marilyn Rodriguez, testifying on behalf of Planned Parenthood advocates, told lawmakers the issue goes beyond the health of the person affected. As COVID-19 and the current flu epidemic make clear, your health and safety impacts my health and safety, she said. If somebody has COVID, I want them to go to the hospital. Rogers, however, told colleagues this is simply about gathering data, and the fallout from all of that, she said, is irrelevant. It's not my job to determine if someone is dissuaded from care, especially if someone is not a citizen, Rogers said. And she turned aside a question about how she feels about people possibly not getting care because of her legislation. This is not a germane to the topic, Rogers said. Our final story in state news. County presents $548 million budget for fiscal year 2025-26 by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer. Yuma County proposed a recommended budget of $548.4 million, calls for a 4% reduction in overall spending from the current year, and keeps the county's property tax rate unchanged for the 14th year in a row. Although property values are rising, the tax levy remains well below the state allowed maximum, a trend that began more than a decade ago. County Administrator Ian McGooey on Monday presented the Board of Supervisors the recommended budget for fiscal year 2025-26, outlining a spending plan focused on fiscal responsibility, capital investment, and maintaining low taxes. On the tax side, the budget proposes no change to the county's overall property tax rate. However, as assessed property values rise, some homeowners will see modest increases in their annual tax bill. For example, a median value home assessed at $281,191 in the current fiscal year will pay about $15.93 more in general fund property taxes if the assessed value rises by the projected 2.34%. The total estimated increase across all county-related tax rates, including flood control and the library district, would be approximately $23.37. These estimates do not account for valuation limits set by the county assessor, which typically reduce the actual impact on taxpayers. No board action was required on Monday, but supervisors will begin detailed discussions with departments, elected offices, and outside agencies on Tuesday. This is a sound, fiscally sustainable, and conservative budget that reflects our strategic priorities and prepares Yuma County for the long-term financial health, McGooey said during the public meeting. It allows us to maintain core services, address critical infrastructure, and reward our workforce, all without increasing the tax burden. The budget process continues with departmental hearings beginning Tuesday, May 6. The tentative budget is scheduled for board adoption on June 2, followed by a public hearing and final budget adoption on June 23. The proposed general fund budget, which pays for overall county operations, totals about $166 million, representing a 6.5% decrease from the current year. While expenditures are projected to increase slightly by 1.94%, overall spending will fall due to more than 30% reduction in transfers to other funds, largely related to a drop in one-time expenses. Revenue is expected to grow modestly, with state shared sales tax projected to rise 2.61%, local sales tax up 0.79%, and vehicle license tax increasing by 11.34%. Overall general fund revenue is projected to increase by 2.93%. The general fund is forecasted to end the fiscal year with a balance of 24.64% of total uses, exceeding the county's 20% policy reserve. Included in this is a $5 million recession contingency, part of the county's strategy to weather potential economic downturns. Staffing levels are also being addressed conservatively. The proposed budget includes no new full-time equivalent positions. In fact, the total full-time equivalents across all funds would decrease by 16.125, with a minor increase in 0.140 full-time equivalents in the general fund due to position realignments. The reduction is primarily driven by the expiration of vacant, grant-funded roles in special revenue funds. 11 reclassification requests were submitted, with 10 recommended for approval by Human Resources, resulting in a total cost of just over $26,000. To help recruit and retain a skilled workforce, the county is proposing a 3% performance-based salary increase for eligible employees. Other programs such as paid time off buyback, tuition reimbursement, and loan repayment assistance will continue under fiscal year 2025-26 budget. Capital investments remain a priority, with significant projects moving forward in multiple areas. These include the completion of the new administrative services building, renovations and expansions at the health department, and development of the South County transfer site. Several new projects are also being funded, including upgrades to courthouse fire systems, HVAC controls, courtroom audiovisual systems, and GIS technology in the jail district. Five capital improvement projects will address security systems, lighting, and infrastructure in the aging detention center. After the presentation, Supervisor Tony Reyes reflected on Yuma County's conservative fiscal practices over the past 13 to 14 years, expressing pride in keeping the property tax levy consistently below the state allowed maximum, a distinction few other counties share. While steady growth has helped the county avoid financial trouble, Reyes cautioned that economic downturns like the one in 2008 still pose a risk. He urged the supervisors to take a long-term approach to help prevent potential budget shortfalls in the future. Reyes suggested revisiting the levy each year and stressed the importance of proactive planning, as the county may not be able to react quickly to sudden economic shifts. "We've kept our levy well below the allowable maximum for 14 years," Reyes said. But even a 1% adjustment phased in over several years could make a meaningful difference. "We have to keep looking ahead, because if economic conditions change, we need to be ready." The supervisors are scheduled to consider adoption of the tentative budget on June 2nd, with final adoption expected on June 23 following a public hearing. Weather forecast for this week starting today, Wednesday, April 7, we'll have a low of 61 degrees, a high of 84 degrees, average humidity of 43%, and winds in the 3 to 8 mile per hour range. Thursday, we'll see a low of 61, high of 94, 31% humidity, 3 to 6 mile per hour winds. Friday, we'll have a low of 65, a high of 103, 22% humidity, and 3 to 6 mile per hour winds. And Saturday, we'll have a low of 72, a high of 108, 15% humidity, and 3 to 10 mile per hour winds. We are at the conclusion of today's Yuma Sun Daily program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cherie Stevens. Thank you for tuning in today. If you missed any part of this program, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and listen to it on demand under Broadcast Info and Audio. The Wall Street Journal is next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.